We're through the Oogie Loves here, people. We discuss Food Fight.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey Dan,
hey.
How's it going?
No,
what's wait, going on, man?
You beat me.
I'm not doing it. Introducing myself to you two guys. I'm
look, Stuart. You snossed and you lost. Okay.
All the way from Lefferts Place, Brooklyn. This is Flophouse. What?
That is too detailed.
All the way from Brooklyn. It's Flophouse. The Flophouse.
Flophouse Studios,
featuring Dan McCoy
as Dan McCoy,
Stuart Wellington
as Stuart the Man Wellington,
and Elliot Kalin
as himself,
with musical guest
the Captain and Tennille.
And now here's your host,
Dan McCoy.
Wait, we didn't do that silly.
Hello.
No, so
it's
Dan.
Me.
Yeah.
Dan McCoy.
No, you got to do a monologue. Hey, it's great to be here. We've
guys,
got the Captain and Tennille.
You guys see this in the news?
have you ever seen Saturday Night Live? They don't have that kind of monologue.
Okay. It's great to be here. The Captain and Tennille. I'm here promoting my movie, of course, Food Fight.
Is that the movie? Okay, so what do we do on this podcast? Okay.
This is a movie, this podcast.
This is a movie that we podcast.
This is
not a bad movie.
Every week, I mess it up.
Every 2 weeks.
I partly blame you guys.
Weird.
Yeah, because
okay.
We go into your brain and okay. Step around in little boots on.
I think it's time we have
accepted me.
I think it's time we have a little rap session here,
okay.
Guys.
Okay,
and
sure.
We're rapping.
Real talk for
we're
you.
We're rapping about a podcast. The podcast called the Flophouse Podcast. That's what we do. And we're about to put in your earballs a little story about a shitty movie that we just watched.
Okay. And what was the name of that movie we just watched?
A story all about how our life got flipped, turned upside down by watching a movie called Food Fight.
Food Fight. Well, maybe you've heard of it. Food Fight is the worst movie ever made. It's become something of a minor internet sensation.
Yeah.
In that it's been mentioned on the internet before. This is a surprisingly high budgeted animated film starring
over $60 million. Is that what?
A $65 million budget.
Oh, boy.
And the sky was dark, for all the stars were in Food Fight.
And by stars, actually, there's a pretty big cast, and also
you got Charlie Sheen, you got Hilary Duff, you got your Cloris Eva Longoria.
Leachman.
Here's the
Cloris
here's
Leachman,
Cloris
Chris
Leachman.
Kattan,
who else is in it? Christopher Lloyd,
Ed Asner,
Jerry Stiller, Ed Asner. Did you say Eva Longoria?
I did say
Larry Miller, Wayne Brady.
Hot off of the success of Oogie Loves comes Christopher Lloyd
and
Cloris
Leachman back again.
Yeah, hot off the success of Delgo comes Chris Kattan.
Hot off the success of whatever Hilary Duff does is Hilary Duff.
Yeah, I mean, she does animated shit, right? She should be
a young
Well, she has a
lady?
Digestive disease and she poops animation. When Stuart says she does animated shit, he's actually right, but it's a serious disorder.
Oh, he's picking apart every word I said.
Yeah, I did.
I better watch out.
It's called animated bowel syndrome, and it's a real danger. ABS is nothing to joke about. So anyway, this is a movie with a huge budget, huge cast, and some of the worst animation in the history of animation.
Boy.
This is if anyone listening remembers the Saturday morning cartoon show and Reboot.
Yeah.
It was a show called Reboot. It was all computer generated because it took place inside a computer. At the time it was kind of impressive, but now it looks really cheap. It looks like this movie Food Fight was made 25 years before Reboot.
Yeah. The inexplicable nature of the animation and the frenetic nature of the animation, I likened it to, if you've ever seen a Ralph Bakshi movie, there's always something crazy going on in the corner of the screen. Now imagine that's the main thing that's happening in the movie.
Now imagine that was animated with the program that came with your PC, and it was done by like your 7-year-old nephew with about 10 minutes notice.
Well, half of it was done by your 7-year-old nephew. Half of it is done by the guys who do like 3D animated porn.
Yeah, there's a lot of female characters. Well, there's two female characters in this who look like
inappropriately sexy.
Look, are ridiculously inappropriately sexy to the point that like. The villainess, who's Eva Longoria, does the voice of, who's supposed to be the sexy bad villain,
mm-hmm.
like the the two different cheeks of her butt are sculpted so that when she's wearing like a dress, you can see them
fully through the dress,
like her butt cheeks moving independently of each other.
And then later
on, sounds like impressive animation, but it's not.
And then later on, she shows up for no reason in thigh highs and a Catholic schoolgirl dress.
Yeah, it's a regular purge. So mm-hmm. anyway, this is a movie that has an interesting history in that they poured a lot of money into it, and they figured they'd get a lot of money back because it takes place in a supermarket after dark when the products come to life.
After dark? Only the freaks come out at night.
So they have all these characters in the background who are product placement characters. There's like all these mascots.
Your Charlie's
Clean,
Tuna.
Charlie Tuna. You got your Mrs. Butterworth, your Hawaiian
Punchy.
Punch guy.
Charlie
you've got
your
same as Punchy.
Yeah. Sorry. You've got
Come
your,
on.
And then you've got the ones
Show
that
the respect
I'm
he
not
deserves.
Sure actually belong to real products, like your flatulent Foreign Legion French cheese, your frog with a crown.
Yeah,
your waiter.
Your weasel that looks like a scrotum with two turkey legs attached to him.
There's the offensive anti-Semitic giant nose guy. I'm not even sure what his product was. He seemed to have a nose-based business where he smelled things for a living.
I mean, he wasn't that anti-Semitic, though. I just think he was.
He was a doctor.
Right?
I mean, what do you want?
No, he basically was like, what I can do for you is this. This is all I can offer you. For you, half price, $10.
Pay no attention to my giant nose.
But the hero of the movie, played by Charlie Sheen, and by played, I mean that he seems to have spoken his lines.
Showed up in a bathrobe.
It's almost like they handed him a portable tape recorder and they said, just say these whenever. So he did them when he was like tired and about to take a nap, or when he was sitting on the toilet
commuting.
And bored. Commuting, yeah.
He's a dog detective.
He plays the character.
Not McGruff.
That's his most famous dog detective.
He plays the character Dex Dog Detective, and that is his name. Dex Dog Detective, who has a human body but a dog's head, and he dresses like Indiana Jones in some parts and like Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca in other parts.
Yeah, your two most famous cinematic Nazi adventurers, anti-Nazi people, which will come into play later.
They come into play later when they fight the Nazis. So he is the hero adventurer of. What's it called? Food Town or some shit?
I don't know. It's a supermarket. It's a grocery store.
When the lights go out, the supermarket is transformed into a whole town that has like fields and a river.
Seen something like this before.
It's almost like somebody heard the idea of Toy Story, then got hit in the head with like an I-beam. And then, like mumbled this while they were in surgery because they didn't give them enough anesthetic to keep them under.
You know what children love? They love the grocery store, and more than that, they love the cast of characters that
you
lives the
well,
grocery
and,
store.
It opens with this elderly grocer shutting down the store for the night, and as the lights go out, there's this plaintive music as if, like, well, the fun's over for the day.
the carnival's leaving town for another year.
This world of magic and whimsy that is a food store. This is preceded, by the way, by not even a real title screen. There's just like an animated thing that says Food Fight, just like a DVD menu screen.
Yeah, no, it looks like the production company's named Food Fight.
It looks like Food Fight Productions made this titleless movie. So they're shutting down the supermarket with a wistful air because, like you're saying, the circus tents are coming down. The roustabouts are packing it all up.
All good things must come to an end.
The food clowns are taking their makeup off.
The ground is salted with the tears of the children who've had to leave.
Yeah, the ball team is packing up their lockers for the last grocery store game of the season. It already has this wistful feeling for something no one has any emotional connection to, which is shopping for groceries.
Then the lights go down, and the lights come back up, and unlike Toy Story, which creates
takes place in the real world.
Yeah, it creates magic out of the things that we see every day.
Is that because we've slipped into another dimension?
That's the thing. Like,
alive?
It
the
seems
grocery
like...
store has transformed into an entirely different place where there's like churches. Like, what was
there's like a Russian Orthodox church, a field. There's an Empire State Building or a Chrysler Building or something.
Yeah.
There's like. There's all. It seems like it's this
there's
kind of.
There's probably a Jewish temple because of the.
Since
the,
there's
the,
so
there's many Jewish
since,
characters.
Let me just reveal
well,
at the end that
a nightclub and a.
It's revealed at the end that Dex Dog Detective is Jewish, which makes no sense.
Because Dog Detective is
he
not
always
a Jewish
wears a hat,
name.
Elliot.
Well, they changed it at Ellis Island from Dog Tektowitz. But he does always wear a hat. That's true. That now I understand it's because he's showing his humility before Yahweh. Sorry, I should have said Adonai. But anyway, that's besides the point.
Sorry.
Hashem. Let's just call him Hashem, shall we? That's the proper Jewish name for him. But I think it's like a pocket universe that all grocery stores lead to, because when a food product icon, and they're called Ikes in it, and when you have Nazi characters running around saying "kill all the Ikes," it's a little too close to the actual slur for Jewish people. Like, it's weird. I didn't expect to be watching this animated movie about food mascots coming to life at night and feel like a palpable feeling of anti-Semitism.
They're like, "kill all the Yods." Those terrible Yods.
They're called Jaws because people eat them with their mouths.
Yep.
Anyway.
Put them on the food train.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
That was too much.
I apologize. Too far.
Can you apologize, Alex?
On behalf of the makers of Food Fight.
So anyway, we haven't even gotten into the plot of this thing.
Yeah.
Dex Dogtective is the adventurer who keeps Food Town, let's just call it Safe, even though that's the name of a real grocery store chain. He's in love with a cat named Cat. He's in love with
a human
woman with cat ears
and makeup that looks like whiskers, basically.
And named Sunshine Goodness, who is the mascot for a raisin company.
That's weird.
And
Dex Dogtective
has an uncomfortable number of almost upskirts.
Constantly.
Yeah.
And I think one of you guys were saying she's like the beginner figure for trying to get a guy into being a furry.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Oh, she's just like a sexy woman with like cat ears. That's nothing.
Yeah, then a few years later, you're like, oh man, this picture of a cat next to a picture of a human vagina, it's doing it for me.
Like, what have I become? And it all started with Sunshine Goodness.
But the weirdest thing is later on, they show a picture of the product that she is the Ike for.
Yeah.
And there's
I'm not comfortable with that term. I can use the term Ike.
Okay. Icon, is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So, there's nothing cat-like about her on the box.
No, yeah. She just looks like
a
human
almost
woman.
Like she adopts that in order to, I guess,
fit in with the animals.
Can I just
fit in with this dog?
So it's a little bit less weird
that she's
in love with this Anubis jackal-headed god. It is true that when you die, Dex Dogtective weighs your heart against a feather.
Can I just
see if you'll make it into heaven?
Take a sidebar here. While you're talking about the product that Sunshine is the Ike for,
I mean, we have to keep saying it. But.
Can I just point out, I looked on IMDb, the one piece of trivia for Food Fight, or not trivia, actually, onto the goof section. The one goof. Otherwise, a perfect
otherwise
movie.
Flawless.
99%.
The one goof that IMDb.
This takes it down from an A++++++ to just an A++++.
That they list is Dex Dogtective's love, Sunshine, is supposedly the face of a raisin
and
brand.
Supposedly, it won't even take the movie at face value.
Supposedly the face of a raisin brand.
And she keeps throwing raisins at Dex that he eats.
And occasionally gives Dex, a dog, raisins. It is a well-known fact that raisins are toxic to dogs. So that is the one goof in Food Fight.
But anyway, so Dex Dogtective is in love with Sunshine Goodness. He also has a best friend named Dan Daring or something like that.
Yeah,
Daring is a combo character, but his name is
Danger Dan.
Danger Dan or Dynamic Dan or something.
He's a squirrel that looks like a monkey, which is significant because he is a racist black character.
He's Wayne Brady playing a black character, and it's weird because he must be the mascot for like a chocolate product, which we never see because he's constantly making chocolate puns. When he talks to women, he's like, oh, I want to put some chocolate frosting on your cake.
Yeah,
like,
he wants to ejaculate chocolate on
later when he meets
chocolate chips at one point.
He cries chocolate, which must hurt like hell.
Oh,
the
yeah.
chocolate chips coming out of your tear ducts, just tearing through the mucous membrane.
Pushing them out.
But and also later, and this will make more sense at the time, no it won't, when he meets a blind elderly gay bat, the bat keeps sniffing going, chocolate, well, you smell delicious.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Dex Dogtective's in love with Sunshine Goodness. He wants to propose marriage to her, but because his friend Dan... this is after he saved Food Town from a character called the Fat Cat Burglar, who is clearly a rat, who has a bunch of sidekicks who are kung fu guinea pigs.
Yeah, and this never comes back into play other than establishing Dex Dogtective as an adventurer.
The kung fu guinea pigs show up a lot.
They show up, but like... This is like the equivalent of the beginning
exploding.
Of a James Bond movie where he has an unrelated adventure.
This is just to show us that Dex is indeed not just named Dogtective, but is a real dog.
So you're saying that the director knows his stuff. He's got his chops.
He's a fucking...
He's made his bones.
He's a Spielberg.
No dog pun intended.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is just like Tintin.
Yeah.
So
Tintin.
Tintin. So Tauntaun.
He's a real Tan-Tan.
The Adventures of Tauntaun.
Is that an old lady
singing? That's called Tan-Tan.
I love that Tan-Tan and Snowy.
And Tan-Tan is so fun.
Those two French brothers who are police or something, the old sea captain. I just love that Tan-Tan. His mysteries in the Russia or China or the moon. Looking
He's
for treasure.
Reporter.
I always hope he finds enough treasure so he can retire, because it's such a dangerous career being a boy reporter. I say, it's so hot. It's hot out today, I must say. Makes a body feel like just lying around and reading some Tauntaun. More, another mint julep and another Tan-Tan, please.
This is now my most favorite character that exists in the world.
The old Southern Tauntaun.
This old lady who doesn't exist. An old lady Southern who loves Tintin.
I just love the clean art style of her hay. Of her Jay. He's my favorite Belgian cartoonist, although they're all so good.
I used to say there's nothing good came out of Belgium but them waffles, but I was wrong.
I was wrong. There's that clean line art style and that adorable boy detective. A reporter. I'm sorry, it's so hot today.
I shouldn't anyway, be lying in this Tauntaun carcass.
Anyway, I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
I shouldn't keep you anymore. I know you got a lot of mail to deliver, but you get me talking about Tan-Tan. I can't.
We
stop.
Get so few male callers around these parts, and my husband's all cold to me these days in his old age. Why don't you set a while? I'll read you some Tan-Tan. See where things go. It's Tennessee Williams. It's Tintin C. Williams. That's what it is.
It's cat on a hot Tintin roof.
Cat on a hot Tintin roof. Stuart got up and left. Oh, man.
What are we
I don't care. It led to this beautiful moment. Tennessee Williams cat on a hot Tintin roof.
Tan-Tan roof.
Well, I don't have a Southern accent. The character does. Sure. It's like when people say enchilada and they don't have a Spanish accent. Yeah.
It's like when any Spanish character, or I guess Mexican, I don't know, character, Cuban maybe, character on Dexter, who anytime they say anything in Spanish, they're like, oh, you're feeling sick? How about I make you my sopa de pollo?
Yeah, they accent the hell out of it. But anyway, So he's an adventurer. He's a dog detective. He's in love with this girl, but he's about to propose to her. But then his friend crashes his biplane, because of course he's a squirrel. He has a biplane, and distracts them.
Yeah, while his Italian moose buddy was setting up a nice dinner for him.
And in all the bedlam, is that when Sunshine Goodness disappears?
She disappears. And then there's the most surprising flash forward since the Bratz movie.
There's a title card that just says 6 months later. So we're dealing with a character whose girlfriend is missing for half a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the woman he loves.
Like vanishing.
And his response to that, he hasn't been able to find her. So he quits being a dog detective and becomes a club owner of the Casa Banana?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And from now on, a lot of it is a Casablanca shitty parody about mascot food products.
Yeah, because there are two things that kids love. It's branded food products in Casablanca.
And movies from before their parents were born.
Oh, boy. But, yeah.
So it's... What's going on? Oh, this. So
I don't
even
know.
He runs this club, the Casa Banana. All the food. It's everybody comes to Dex's. Yeah. That's what it
including
is.
Including a sexy, I guess, human lady.
A sexy lady who is clearly evil from the first moment she shows up. I don't remember her name.
Voiced by Ava Longoria.
So also still evil. Yeah.
What?
Evil Longoria, as she's known.
But in the real world, in the non. Branded supermarket world.
Wait, what? Yeah,
yeah.
Real world?
Meanwhile, in the real
Christopher Lloyd lurches into the grocery store.
Yeah, in the grocery store that we saw close up earlier wistfully because all the dreams had gone to sleep. This guy lurches in with his henchmen, and he's forcibly replacing all of the store's products with something called Brand X, and he literally lurches around like
it's
a spastic monster.
Jerky.
It has all the drama if. In just a normal play or movie, you had one of the monsters from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers just wander on the set. It's like that level of subtlety.
He's got a huge head, and crazy googly eyes, and it's not even like it's herky-jerky animation. It's like
he's palsied.
Yeah, they animated this character to have a palsy of some sort where he can't control his bodily movements.
And his pupils are pointing in random directions.
And it's Christopher Lloyd, so like, you know, you feel bad already.
He's Mr. Crazy.
He's Mr. Crazy.
There's been a lot of sadness wrestling name. Ever since, like, Suburban Commando. I've been feeling kind of bad.
Well, that's a different issue.
Yeah.
But so they're replacing everything with Brand X, even though the old man doesn't really want to. And so it turns out.
But let's slow down a moment to clarify.
We're going pretty slow.
This is a movie.
We took a lot of time out for A Cat on a Hot Tin Tin Roof.
But this is a movie where the heroes are name brands.
Yeah.
And the villain is the generic brand.
So, yeah, the villain is the
very pro-capitalist, pro-big business.
The villain is the, what we'd have to assume is the cost-effective budget brand. Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange for this movie to take a big business stance since it made so little money.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Since really this was an independent film.
It was a passion project, one has to assume.
Yeah, he was so in love with the idea of a dog having sex with a cat woman.
You think that was why this movie was made? Some one guy had a fetish, and he's like, oh, I got to figure out a way.
I assume he saw an animation online on, like, YouPorn or something,
yeah,
of, like, an animated lady having sex with an animated dog man, and he was like, there's a kid's movie in this. And over time, they whittled down the sex scenes and turned it just into action scenes where food is thrown at people.
If I can figure out a way to put a ton of product placement into this, we can finance the biggest sex fetish animated movie.
The biggest budget furry porn ever made. So anyway, so Christopher Lloyd's crazy palsied man is replacing everything. This lady has come in, and she tries to seduce Dex Dog Detective, but instead, suddenly Ikes are being found dead in the streets. And they literally have sheets over them, like they're dead. And that when a mascot dies, his product disappears, I guess,
yeah,
through some sort of interdimensional mascot magic.
I still don't get, so the person, like the person's dead? What does the product have, what does that matter to them?
Because there's a kind of spiritual link between the two.
So a mascot does well if, like, their product sells well? Like,
I guess
they stronger or have more money in the universe?
Imagine that the mascot is Elliot and the product is E.T.
Okay.
And they have a mental link so that, like, if one of them sees John Wayne kissing in The Quiet Man, the other one kisses. When, like, a mascot gets drunk, his product is lurching around, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay. So if the product does well, they'll do well?
Yeah, I think so. It doesn't really make sense.
Okay. Thanks.
So anyway.
Thanks for clearing up the metaphysics of this shit.
I'm just trying to figure it out. I don't know what the stakes are.
For a movie where the characters just bounce around forever and Dex Dog Detective can fly at various moments, seemingly without any explanation. So it's pretty clear that the woman is the head of Brand X. She starts bringing in her very explicitly Nazi-based army,
yeah,
to take out the brands that she says are inferior.
There's a lot of Leni Riefenstahl style shots.
By which you mean the camera flying around like crazy and people just sticking their faces into it. No, I think you mean more.
I think
you mean more. I think you mean more Ron Howard the Grinch esque shots.
No, but I mean there are like shots of armies massing from above.
A lot of Iron Eagles flying.
Yeah,
literally, in this case, the Iron Eagles are robot mosquito monsters, which we barely see. The one cool thing in the whole movie, and they barely enter into it.
But she
destroyed by giant gum balloons
later on.
But lady has a tango with Dex Dog Detective for some reason.
For some reason, they have a tango
for
in which it's like a sexy like banter tango between a hero and villain that also involves destroying accidentally everything in the room. So like they knock over her fish tank, they knock over a cage of birds, they get a computer wet and it explodes. Like none of it makes any sense.
But usually, also that scene happens like at a place where, say, a tango is already happening.
Yeah, no,
like,
this
like a dance,
like say in True Lies where they're at a fucking dance ball.
Yeah. But this is just like. I guess we should tango now because this is what happens.
The whole movie feels like
one of those dance balls.
It's if the movie, including with the human characters, feel like a lot of these bad movies where someone has heard of a movie, they've never really seen one. Like this guy had a movie recounted to him once. Oh, they tango at that point. I guess all movies have tango scenes.
Yeah, it's like how can we jazz this scene of two characters just talking to
and
each other?
Let's just mention here.
Let's have them do a tango.
So the villain is heavily oversexed, like huge boobs, like very like the butt again, like we said, both cheeks rendered.
But they just won't quit. Am I right, guys? Yeah,
and,
I mean, yeah.
There's a ton of like really inappropriate innuendo that the characters make. There's a lot of what the thing I've complained about on this podcast before, where like someone says like, "Hey, chip happens." When a bag of chips falls over, and it's like they say, a guy goes, "Hey, better ease up on that. Better ease up on that potato juice before you get chip faced." It's like, "Fuck you!" Like a kids' movie shouldn't have puns on shit happens or shit faced. Like, what the fuck?
First off, it's lazy. You're teaching a kid to make lazy, crappy jokes. Hey, man. Off, he doesn't even know what that means.
He shouldn't know what that means.
That's like, a little something for daddy.
Daddy loves. I'll tell you what's for daddy is the sexy lady and the near and the possibility of upskirts happen.
That's for lonely single parent daddy later on to shamefully masturbate
after the kids have gone back to their mothers and leaving behind naught but the copy of Food Fight he bought at the grocery store for $1, thinking it was a Pixar movie.
Okay, repeat this chapter, I guess, over and over.
And since the kids, taking one look at it, knowing they would have no interest in it, never watched it, but said, "Thanks, Dad. Can we go outside and play with Mom early?"
And play with sticks?
He sits there in the mid-afternoon as his kids play in the dirt outside, lazily, sadly masturbating while crying to this supposed children's animated film. Oh, that's your ideal Food Fight viewer, I guess.
Yep.
So anyway,
your demographic breakdown
Fight. That's how a daddy makes lemonade out of lemons.
Ew, that sounds so much grosser than it should.
Yep.
So Dex Dog Detective's got to get to the bottom of it. It takes forever. They go into the real world briefly talk to a computer. This also involves them. There's like a horrible, ugly old lady who throws meat, that Cloris Leachman does the voice of, and they fight her briefly. They encounter a real world mother and baby, which is the single most horrifying, grotesque thing I think I've ever seen.
Now, let's be clear. There are several images in this movie that we simply cannot do justice
to. The number of times that we, and not to sound like another film podcast, not to steal their thing, but the number of times that we just said, "What?" while we were watching it was the highest yet.
Yeah, you, like, oh, God. There's, like, the experience of watching this movie really is, like, let's say you took some drugs and like stared at a Hieronymus Bosch painting while maybe Oogie Loves was playing in the other room. Like
concentrating on a farmland milk container.
Yeah,
because they're heavily covered in this.
It's very difficult to just express the frenetic craziness of just like the images.
Every
of this
shot,
movie.
The camera's swirling around. The characters have no sense of physics or gravity, so they're just bouncing
around.
No
one saw the way an actual human moves before they animated.
Constant shots of characters just thrusting their faces into the camera or falling down while like muttering things to themselves that might be jokes, but you can't quite make them out.
I watch a lot of movies and listen to a lot of music for pleasure that's designed mainly to make you uncomfortable, and none of it compares to this movie.
To the moment
there's
when
a certain level of horror that you just can't achieve through actual intent.
The scariest thing about it was someone made this not intending to horrify and disgust us. Like,
kids will love this.
If someone drew that baby and that mother, which are these horrible, grotesque, like, eraser head things.
Yeah, they're, like, worse than the Stephen Gamel drawings for, like, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Like, don't even bring that up
again. If someone created that to, like, freak out the squares, I'd be like, all right, whatever. But the fact that it's in a kid's movie and it's supposed to be fun, the one thing that saves the moment where they're in the real world is that Dex uses the power of a flying soda bottle, which, again, is never explained. I guess it's supposed to be, like, falling and he glides on it.
He's flying around on it.
In, like,
and then at some point,
he's like Norrin Rad on his silver surfboard, just surfing the spaceways, except it's a full bottle of grape soda, just in midair in a grocery store, and they can't let anyone see them because they might get in trouble, but they just fly right through a guy's legs, and the guy just keeps walking like
he's swooping around, and then at some point, somebody uses a meat cleaver or something and whacks off the cap of the soda
bottle.
And
so that propels it further, yeah.
But it was flying before that.
Doesn't make sense. So anyway, through a flying soda bottle, they meet a computer and also an elderly gay bat with bad eyesight, played by Larry Miller in by far the best performance in the entire movie.
He is the one performance that I would call a good performance in
this movie. His voice is a delight in this. He brings way more talent to the part of the elderly gay bat who is a mascot for I have no idea.
And Larry Miller,
who has like a bow tie attached to his chest for some reason.
I mean, Larry Miller is a tremendously funny guy who in movies unfortunately got relegated. Over and over again, I feel like to like playing him. like the angry Dean character or something,
the asshole or the creep.
But man, what a funny guy, what a charming guy, and every joke that he has as elderly gay bat in Food Fight, he knocks out of the park.
Sure. Yeah, like I've been a fan of Larry Miller for many years since I was a kid, and like to see him in this, it was like, oh no. But then it only made me kind of more of a fan of him that he was able to make even this. The moments he's on it, at least, are like mildly not enjoyable, but like bearable. You know, like he makes even like
well,
those were the only
spin on the lines. I mean,
it's the moment when the torturer stops stabbing you in the in the eyeballs with hot pokers.
Yeah, it's that sweet relief of the pain stopping for a couple seconds.
Sure.
As it then returns
as
immediately afterwards.
Takes a breather and drinks some Gatorade.
Yeah, because it's got the electrolytes he needs.
But also, what a charming character of the elderly gay bat. As you said, Elliot, if you could watch a whole movie about the adventures of an elderly gay bat.
If he's wearing like a 70s disco version of like Bela Lugosi's Dracula tux, he is so like easygoing and droll and likable. And he's just like, and he's so weirdly attracted to the Wayne Brady squirrel character in a way that seems at first like he wants to eat him, but then it is clearly sexual. Like, it's clear that he's attracted to him romantically. And it, like, Larry Miller just has this way of delivering his lines where it's like, hey, look, I'm a bat. I can't see that well. I'm elder. I'm gay. Get used to it. I'm here. I'm queer. I'm a bat. Get used to it.
And you compare it to, like, we've touched on Charlie Sheen's super phoned in performance, but it's interesting.
It may have been just his answering machine message, and they cut it up and re-edited it into lines.
But like Wayne Brady put so much effort into his role of Danger Dan,
and Chris Kattan, who plays the part of a penguin who's always cold, like puts a little
who
bit of energy.
Mumbles
in.
The craziest shit. I did not understand anything he said.
Yeah, a couple times he says something about friends saving him, or that's what friends are for. But then it was like he thought he was the main character of the movie, and the moral of the movie was friends stick together. But he wasn't,
There's a lot of scenes where I feel like they didn't realize each person doing their performance didn't realize they weren't the only person doing a crazy voice in the scene. So it's like crazy mumbly voice and then another one on top.
So you're saying it's like a bad improv show where everyone's gonna be the wacky one in the sketch?
No, like all of the characters are animated frenetically. All of them are doing crazy voices.
And the camera's going apeshit, dude.
And by the way, there is no...
The camera thinks, I better jazz this thing up, because it's not very crazy, so I better loop around a lot.
And there's no unification in the character design. Every single character looks like they're starring in a different animated movie.
Yeah, it feels like they bought the characters on remainder from a series of a lot of failed animated movies.
Walked down a grocery store.
They bought all the characters in a dollar store somewhere.
So anyway, let's get back to the plot. They just briefly, they meet an elderly gay bat. They talk to an IBM computer, and they learn that that Brand X is recalling all of these products. Doesn't make sense. Only the company that makes a product can recall it, but whatever. Brand X is doing it. Brand X is consolidating its control. Dex Dogtective comes back and decides to lead the resistance. They have a parody of the Marseillais Horst Wessel song. No, it wasn't the Horst Wessel song, right?
I don't know.
Or maybe it is the Horst Wessel song. Fight scene from Casablanca. I don't think so. Maybe it was. I can't remember. But it's really bad, but they're also singing along to the...
They're singing to the tune of the Marseillais, but other words
about being mascots or something.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where the villains are infiltrating in such an easily villainous way. They literally march an army and they're torturing animals. There's a scene where this poor elephant who looks like Max Rebo, who I guess is a mascot for a toothpaste, they literally are going to torture him with a dentist drill. At first it looks like they're trying to create feuds between the different types of mascots, but then they're just fucking killing mascots left and right. They're just very openly being evil. And Dex comes back and he leads the foods in a fight And I thought this was the climax of the movie. I thought this was the end of the film. Yeah. That they have an enormous food fight, which is literally just the sides taking turns just hurling food at each other forever.
And it's and not, then it's
and
not
food exploding and the bad and the characters falling down and then getting up and just throwing
and
food
using
at each
the
other.
Same fucking footage
over and over
it's
again.
It's also like not stuff that makes sense, as you pointed out. Like you've got like people shooting pickles at each other and those pickles exploding in gas, and you're like, "There's mustard gas,
mustard
it's
gas,
right there."
Yeah, when you get hit with a pickle, it doesn't explode in a puff of toxic gas.
Not at all, so. No.
Part of the joke of Pixar movies is like they find things that are appropriate to the thing that they're doing. Whereas this movie's just like, I guess whatever food we throw will just explode.
If they have made
whipped cream canisters, gas. Pickles, gas.
Ketchup is just ketchup that flies out.
But it'll kill you.
But it kills you. Potatoes
and it doesn't
explode.
Leave a mess. There's no mess at all. That's the thing about a food fight, guys, mm-hmm. is it makes a it mess. Should,
well, that's they didn't
if
want
just to one of the guys taught me anything. Mm-hmm. It's that food
is that
fights.
Boobs are great.
Boobs are amazing.
Boobs
that's,
are great and often surprise you.
And if it taught often, me something else.
That boobs will appear in the most shocking of places, even on the chest of your best friend.
In a movie that has been boobless for 90 minutes.
In a movie that has teased you with the idea of boobs for an hour and a half, and then suddenly pays that tease off in the best way
with
possible.
Possibly the best boobs.
Well, let's just say it. You know what? I'll just nominate that for best boob reveal scene ever.
So if it taught me something other than that stuff, it's that
it taught me if you put
fights.
Socks in your crotch, Sherilyn Fenn will go apeshit for it.
She goes crazy.
She loves it. She's just gotta have it.
She's just gotta have those socks. I wonder, there's some guy, it's like in The Jerk when Steve Martin thinks the guy is shooting the cans instead of shooting at him. Somebody saw just one of the guys and was like, socks. Ladies go crazy for socks, of course. Anyway, what are we talking about? Just when a guy's taught you anything is that food fights leave a mess.
It leaves a mess. And this movie leaves no mess at all.
They didn't want to render all the splatter, so they just didn't have it there.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a big food fight that goes on forever. They fight the robot insects
robot,
with bubblegum. It's all stupid. It takes and there's the running joke.
A couple of them die, I think.
There's a very short evil general on the bad side, and he so there's they're all that there are three bad guys and their whole army. The three bad guys are the sexy lady, the inappropriately sexy lady. Then there's this
the
guy.
The appropriately sexy lady, right?
Yeah. Then there's this guy who has. Oh, there's four baddies. I'm sorry. Sexy lady. There's the guy with lizard skin who
Snake
is
man.
Turned on by pain and does a weird kind of Claude Rains, Ed Grimley Jr., Boris Karloff, James Mason type
Richard
voice.
O'Brien.
I meant to say James Mason, not Claude Rains. James Mason. And then there's the really short general who's a coward and his pants
kind of
fall
a wizard
down.
Is the, Ed style short.
And then there's
the guy
a
who's like a potato chip. He's like a potato.
Is that what he is?
He's a potato.
I honestly couldn't understand what they were supposed to be.
He's a potato.
So they fight with food for a long time, and then the movie should be over, right? No. Dex has another idea. They're going to cut the power to the main building, which will somehow cause a lightning storm that will explode the building. So they have to put tinfoil lightning rods in the shape of different things on the roofs of their buildings. And it's all done to this song about how they can do it. Like they're going to go for the bright side and the right side or something like that. It doesn't make sense. Anyway, long story short. It turns Mr. Nose, the anti-Semitic guy who's the anti-Semitic caricature whose job is just smelling things, finds out also that there's an additive in Brand X that makes it addictive and toxic, but also Brand X is really plain and boring, so it's the really addictive food that's super plain and doesn't taste good. It doesn't
Again,
make sense.
Don't buy generic food, guys.
But they find out that that's actually an extract from Sunshine Goodness's blood, I guess? I don't know. They're extracting some juice from her that they're injecting into their food to make it taste, to make it addictive? I don't understand.
This is the point in the podcast where people are taking their earbuds out saying, like, okay, the three of these guys just hallucinated this movie.
They're like, okay, Oogie Loves was a fucking Chekhov play next to this. Like,
that was a model of narrative construction.
Yeah, Oogie Loves was a separation next to Food Fight. But anyway, so they're They infiltrate that building. There's this weasel named like Cheesy Weasel, who voiced by the director of the movie, who is
no one else could bring that character to life.
Who's supposed to be like the Peter Lorre Ugarte character from Casablanca,
but he's also like a frenetic turd.
But he's constantly getting
hurt.
He looks
hurt. Like a scrotum crossed with the weasels from Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, it's like if the weasels from Roger Rabbit were reincarnated as a hairy scrotum with legs and a long neck that could like turn around like a serpent.
Yeah.
But the animation wasn't good enough to actually animate that hair stretching, so they just kind of stretched the
skin.
Image.
Yeah. And often you see his face. The idea is that his neck is so long that his body is far away and his face is close to you. But the way they framed it, you don't see the neck, so it just looks like he has an enormous head on a tiny body. Anyway, he sneaks in through the sewers. He cuts the power. The building goes nuts. Dex Dog Detective comes in with a grappling hook and breaks all the Bacta cloning tanks that they're using with Sunshine Goodness's secret essence.
Oh,
I don't
boy.
Know. He manages to save her. They escape from the building when Danger Dan finally pulls off the loop-de-loop that he fucked up in the beginning of the movie, ruining it. Dex's proposal. Then evil...
Better late than never, you know?
It turns out...
It all comes full circle.
It turns out...
Like the loop-de-loop.
Then suddenly, the bad guys have been destroyed, except giant Christopher Lloyd is somehow in Food Town.
Wait a minute. I thought he was a person in another universe.
We thought so, too. Turns out he's a robot. He's giant in Food Town. But at this point, we were like, what the hell is going on? Turns out he's a robot, and Eva Longoria is inside his head. Turns out Eva Longoria was the mascot for a genetically modified prune brand.
Yeah, she went to Brazil to get plastic surgery to become beautiful.
And she says at one point,
it's a common story.
If you got a Brazilian.
They're like, how did you, but you're an Ike. How did you get the humans to help you? And she goes, when you have a body like this, it doesn't matter what size you are. Size only counts for men. And there's this shot of the gay bat looking at the squirrel, and it's like going, blah, 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 blah.
And there should be a shot of the three of us with our fucking faces in our hands.
Just our jaws dropped, and not in the Tex Avery Wolf, like, turned on way. In the, like, I can't understand, like, I can't comprehend what I'm seeing. It's
too
like
much gay innuendo for this.
There are times in this movie when it's like you're a child, and you pick up an adult's book, and you know there's information in it, and there's pictures occasionally, but you can't read it, and you don't know what it means. And you know, to somebody, this means something. But to you, it's incomprehensible gibberish. That's what this movie is like.
I feel like I've stumbled into like a sub-basement that's owned by a serial killer, and I see all this crazy shit on the walls, and I can't make sense of it.
But to him,
but I know it's horrifying.
To him, there's some evil logic. It's like
why are the eyes cut out of all these
pictures?
This
is like reading the Codex Serafinianus or something. Anyway, so the... it's weird. Okay, so she starts attacking Dex, and he's like, they're like, he won't fight a woman. He's too noble. He's not going to do it. And Sunshine Goodness, who's supposed to be the nicest, sweetest character, goes, I'll do it, and then beats the shit out of Eva Longoria.
Cat fight.
And beats her so hard that her plastic surgery breaks, and she becomes an ugly person again.
Which is always hilarious.
And frankly, I felt a lot of sympathy for her. Even though she's come in as a Nazi and tried to kill everybody, everyone's like, ha ha, you're ugly. And it's like, well, that's okay, so the heroes of the movie are making fun of an ugly person? Like, that's...
Yeah, I wonder why she got plastic surgery in the first place, you know?
Yeah, with all this fucking peer pressure, making fun of her. So, and then it ends with Dex Dog Detective finally proposing to Sunshine Goodness.
And have the Jewish wedding of their dreams.
And then during the credits, it cuts to their Jewish wedding, where he steps on a milk carton at the end, and it's very...
Because milk's addictive, right?
It's the booze of their world.
Yeah, I guess. Well, you don't step
on
a wine...
It's like Alien Nation, right?
You don't... Yeah, yeah. They get drunk on milk.
Bottle, but you step on a wine glass.
You step on a glass, but it's not full of wine.
Yeah, sure.
Wait, you don't step on milk at a Jewish wedding?
You don't step on milk at a Jewish wedding, no. Most Jewish weddings don't even serve milk. Because they want to have a meat
dish.
It builds
strong bones.
It does, that's true. It's very strong bones.
Do you go to a lot of weddings where you just order a glass of milk?
Yeah, all the time. One milk, please.
Sure.
I toast with
please.
It.
Please, hey, Aunt Beru, give me one of them milks.
Give me a plastic cup with milk in it from a space cow, Aunt Beru. Uncle Owen, you told me about how that vaporator's broken. I got to fix it tomorrow before I go to Tashi Station. It's the Owen and Beru Catering Company. It's all organic, vaporator-fed meat.
Okay.
So R2-D2 is the waiter. Anyway, C-3PO is the bartender, of course. Anyway, so they have their Jewish wedding where they play even an off-brand version of Hava Nagila. Like, even that sounds terrible.
Yeah, and then they cut to a pop song that is basically the off-brand brand version of I'm a Believer by the Monkees.
Yeah. And wow, and we're just sitting there being like, what? What did I see?
And then during the credits, there are a bunch of gags featuring the characters we've grown to love that mystify us yet again.
I wonder why they, if, like, I'm sure they made Dex Jewish as a joke, but, like, I wonder if it was like, you know what, we're going pretty heavy with the Nazi imagery. Just to make sure no one knows we're not, no one thinks we're Nazis, we'll make Dex Jewish at the end.
Yeah.
And at the end, there's a joke about Sunshine Goodness is like, I want to see what's under your hat finally, and takes off his hat, and there's another hat underneath, and it's like, I didn't even fucking realize he had a hat on the whole movie. Like, was it supposed to be a running gag?
I'm so intrigued by his weird dog head. Like, this weird half man, half Vargier hybrid.
Yeah. Look, we've gone so long on this movie because it is so inexplicable that I think that we need to go straight to final judgments. And that is the question of the night.
Is it a good bad movie? Spookily good bad.
No, no. Is this a good bad movie? A bad bad movie?
It's Shockvember now.
Oh, it's Shockvember. That's right. It's Turkvember. Turkey Day.
Is this a good bad movie? A bad movie? Or a movie you kind of liked? Elliot, what do you have to say?
Oh, man. It doesn't get any badder than this. It's one of those movies that's so bad that, like, Dan at one point was like, I want to share this with people because it's so bad. Because you feel like you want proof that you went through a thing. Like, you want, it's like, I assume when someone comes back from a war and they're like, I'm glad you didn't have to go through what I went through.
I feel so much closer to you guys.
But
right now.
But I wish you could have had experienced it so you'd know what I experienced. Yeah. Like, it's so bad, so poorly written, so poorly animated, so poorly voice acted, except for Larry Miller. So poorly, like, everything about it is poorly made. It's a movie that feels like an animation demo reel for a very shitty software company. Yeah. And somehow they got all these famous, I mean, they got famous actors to do it because they had a huge budget and they didn't spend any of it on the animation, but
for all those reasons, that's why I'm saying that it is a good bad movie.
Oh no!
Because it is inexplicable. It is a movie that's
To get to the point where it is good bad for the viewer, you have to sit through like an hour and 10 minutes of it until you enter some kind of like delusional state.
Well, it is difficult to make fun of simply because it is so difficult to follow. Like, a really good bad movie has a clear narrative thrust, and this movie is so frenetic for a lot of it that it is not necessarily that. But it is so weird.
It's very weird.
It is such a strange, off-putting, crazy experience that I'll say it is a good bad movie because it is unlike anything
if
that you'll ever
see,
do in
if
your
you
life.
If you see only one movie about a dog saving the world of food mascots from a sexy Nazi, make it Food Fight.
Mm-hmm.
With a gay elderly bat in it.
I feel like most
where are you
good
going,
bad
Stuart?
Movies. I think I'm actually leaning closer toward good bad movies.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like most good bad movies have one or two really strange off the wall things that people kind of latch onto. But there's no grounding in this movie. It's so strange and horrifying to look at. Like, there's nothing.
You know what? You've turned me around, both of you. I'll say good bad also.
Yeah.
It's not, like, I do not recommend watching it on your own. You'll get no pleasure from
it. It's not good bad the way I thought that, like, Bullet in the Head was good bad. It was like, that was stupid fun. Like, that was bad, but it was like, it was not, you know, there were things that were just stupid.
Well, and it's not even good bad in the way that The Room is good bad, where it's a delight from start to finish how inept it is.
No.
But it is a baffling experience.
I will say this is a new category that I'll call an experience. You know, like, it's hard to rate this on the regular scale of good or bad, because it's very bad, but, yeah, it's a singular moment in human history.
Yeah, you're through the looking glass on this one.
Oof, yeah. And on the other hand, it's nothing but dogs having sex with cat women.
Sure. Before we move on to letters,
and black squirrels having sex with elderly gay bats.
Before we move on to letters, there are two things I want to address with people. Number one, just a reminder.
Are
that
you firing us, Dan?
No, just number one. Just a reminder that the video
job.
Contest.
You're fired. Nice haircut.
No, the Flophouse House Cat video.
House Cat video contest.
He's the house cat Arthur's theme.
Yeah, it's still on. Go to the.
There's some good stuff out there so far.
Yeah.
Go to flophousepodcast.com to download both the green screen footage of us goofing around and He's the House Cat, parentheses, Arthur's theme, to make your video to enter in the He's the House Cat
contest. There's been a lot of, there's been some very good entries, so the bar is set very high, so I say put a lot of effort into this. It's good. And what do you win if you win, Dan?
You get a Flophouse t-shirt and the chance to choose a movie for us to flop on a
podcast. All America is ducking from the gauntlets being thrown.
Yeah.
Well put.
But for further...
That was an Elliot Sal thing I just said.
But for further explication of the contest...
You say stuff like that all the time, yeah?
Go to flophousepodcast.com, to the blog section.
To our new website?
To our brand new
beautiful website?
You want to see something professional done on a computer, watch Food Fight. Yeah. Or go see our website.
Courtesy of a new web designer, Naaman Hampton. Thank you for putting that together.
Did a fantastic job. It looks great. Yeah. Way better than the shitty one you put together, Dan.
I apologize.
That ugly, what was that, Blogspot?
It was a Blogspot.
Terrible. How long do we have that for? 6 years?
Oh, boy. Anyway... Moving on to the other announcement. Naaman did a great job.
And
what's the other big announcement? Are we all getting married?
When's the deadline for the House Cat video contest?
It is December the 1st.
Okay, December 1st. 2 days before my birthday.
The other announcement is
December 7th.
Our next episode of our show, we will be taking part in a new thing, which is a podcast pod crawl. This was proposed to us from our friends over at the Read It and Weep podcast, which is... three podcasts, Read and Weep, ourselves, and Proudly Resents, three bad movie podcasts, will be covering linked series of movies, and those movies, in this case, will be the Star Wars prequels. So Read and Weep will be doing episode one.
Classic movies.
We will be doing episode two.
In the next episode.
And Proudly Resents will be doing episode three. So if you want to do the pod crawl... You can listen to those three consecutive episodes.
Check out Read It and Weep's premiere of the pod crawl with Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Minotaur.
So we don't have to watch that
and
one,
we'll be
right?
Doing Attack of the Clowns.
And then finally it'll be number three on Brothers Ends, Revenge of the
Sims.
Revenge of the Scythe.
So those are the two announcements.
Also, here's a third announcement.
What?
There's some kind of weird podcast award or something.
There's
some kind of wonderful. There's some kind of Las Vegas podcast award or something, and we're nominated for...
You go to podcastawards.com.
And we're nominated for a movie podcast, so we'd appreciate it if you would go and vote for us in the movie podcast category.
And there's some stiff competition.
Oh,
is that an innuendo? Like, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Three things to remember. One, make your video for the House Cat contest. Two, check out Read It and Weep for the beginning of the pod crawl, which will be the part two in. It's a pod crawl flophouse sandwich. And three, vote for us at podcastawards.com in the movie category. Dan?
Now it's time for the Flophouse movie mailbag.
And I'm just going to break it down, guys. We don't have time for a song. Let's keep moving.
Yeah. So this first letter...
for the letters. Oh, first letter damn here. It. The first letter of the year. Not really. Anyway, continue. The
most inaccurate theme.
Do-do-do-do. Do you have more song, Elliot?
What would we do, baby?
Without letters.
What would we do, baby?
Is a time for love and a time for letters. Let's open the mailbag. You can have a letter here or put it there. Time for the bag. Time for the bag.
Whatever happened to the letters? The milkman, the paperboy,
the evening letters.
All right.
Letter on the mailbag. Never met him before.
Okay.
Who cares?
Thank
Open
you
up
for
the mailbag.
Thank you for being a mailbag. Okay. Travel around the road and back to bag. Your heart is letters. You're a mail and a letter door.
Doo-doo-doo-doo. Holy shit!
Mailbag. Mail, all right. Mail. Mailbag.
Show me that letter again.
Show me that letter.
Don't waste another mailbag on the song and singing.
All right, so this first letter is...
Seinfeld. Letters.
First letter's from Dr. James A., last name withheld.
Hey there, James.
It's a long one.
I mean,
one,
Dr. So, James. Oh.
Mr. So Dr. James.
This goes back a little while. He says,
he says, I just invented fire.
I've been a listener of your fine podcast for quite a while and have always enjoyed your commentary.
Thanks,
it
James.
It was a real treat to see that commentary in action at the showing of Jaws 4 at the 92Y.
Oh, back in, we did. Back in the March? Summer. Oh, no, July. That's right, June.
It was a fantastic show and immensely entertaining, but thanks. There was something missing from the proceedings.
Something mincing?
And I feel it would be professionally remiss of me if I didn't bring it up. The treatment of the novelization of Jaws the Revenge was treated with scant, if any, attention. And I think you and the organizers all owe it to yourselves to pick up a copy and read this piece of work.
Is it on Kindle?
I consider myself something of a 20th century American lit, i.e. difficult literature, literary professional. The novelization of the Jaws 4 in plot points alone rivals anything I've encountered in my studies, graduate or otherwise. It contains digressive plots within digressive plots, arranged to a point of confusion that would make Pynchon blush. There are a few brief diversions into magical realism. The action and adventure elements are so simultaneously heightened and flattened that they appeal more that they appear more pastiche of action and adventure cliches than actual attempt to compose action and adventure. In effect, Jaws the Revenge may just be the epitome of the postmodern novel. If you'll allow me, I'd like to present this itemized list of the main reasons to read the novelization of Jaws the Revenge. Number one, once the action moves to the island, a voodoo priest with a grudge against Michael engages in a ceremony which creates a psychic link with a shark,
thereby
merging his vengeance-seeking activities with that of the natural world, so much that each loses a piece of himself. The priest becomes part shark and spirit,
what?
As the shark becomes part human. To break it down into simpler terms, a voodoo priest possesses the shark.
Now, that actually makes more sense than the movie, in which the shark just happens to know that.
Just has a grudge.
Just has a grudge, and then still travels 3,000 miles.
It's an angry
to,
shark.
Number like two, the hit video game, Angry Sharks.
We get several digressive chapters at the beginning of the book, narrating, from the shark's point of view, the trip from Amity to the Bahamas. Number three, there's a long involved subplot. So long and involved that it's really more of a main plot of the novel, detailing Hoagie's dealings with a Colombian cartel that uses the Bahamas as a point of departure for smuggling drugs to the U.S. Number four.
I'd read that.
Attendant to the
a
subplot.
A Hoagie adventure.
There's another long, digressive description of speedboats detailing how speedboats are made, how they're driven, and why they're optimal for smuggling drugs to the U.S. from the Bahamas. Number five. Attendant to the speedboat subplot, there's another subplot about a hitman character who, similar to the voodoo priest, begins to reflect the shark's naturalist view of the universe, using naturalism in the 19th century literary sense. Number six, giving the backstory of the hitman character, we the readers are treated to a whole chapter on the grueling process of transforming cocoa leaves into cocaine powder.
Number so there's a lot of filler in this book where they just put pamphlets in.
Yeah. Number seven, finally, to get back to the main point, a voodoo priest controls the shark.
Yeah, now you're talking.
I hope you'll take this all into consideration and take a chance and read this bizarre book. Thanks very much for the podcast and the live show. Yours, Dr. James A. Last.
That's right.
Why does the voodoo priest hate the
He has
the
a
family?
Grudge against Michael for some reason.
Yeah. Okay.
But you don't have to take my word for it. Check out Jaws 4 the Revenge at your local library dumpster. Da-da-da. I do want to read that now.
Yeah, this second letter... It's titled, A Suggested Trademark for Dan McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Original Peaches, although the Flophouse community has failed to give Dan our condolences over his recent knee injury, I'd like to suggest a way in which our...
I think it's no longer that recent.
A way in which our hobbled host...
The knee injury is almost old enough to celebrate a birthday.
I mean, it takes a full year to heal, but whatever, guys. While attending the most recent bad movie night screening of Jaws the Revenge... It was a sad sight to witness the flapper's beloved, host Dan McCoy slink behind the screen and around the stage to join the audience for the movie. All that bitterness and disappointment in his life clearly tipped the scale.
It was too bad. Elliot and I just jumped
just
right off the stage.
Hopped up there on the stage, yeah.
I think we did spinning jump kicks.
All right.
I actually jumped onto my hands and then did a handspring up onto the stage, onto your shoulders, and then you did the old fastball special on me. Yeah,
all the disappointment is like both your knees.
Clearly tip the scale.
I actually did a slide on my knees towards the lip of the stage, as if to say, knees, aren't they great?
And can long no longer stand to house itself in the dark recesses of his mind, instead manifesting itself as a painful, crippling injury in his knee to counter all the disturbed and perverted thoughts forever circulating in his head.
So it's like The Brood, but it's just your knee getting hurt.
What a contrast when compared to Stuart, who sat in front of me during the movie and blinded me with his boozy, ethereal glow, which in radiance could only be rivaled by the inexplicable halo around Lorraine Gary while Ellen Brody was vacationing in the Bahamas. Yeah. Could this indicate that both she and Stuart are sharing a menopausal romance with a man named Hoagie? Yeah. I'll leave you to be the judge.
We both want hoagies in our mouths.
Anyway.
Whoa.
Observe.
I don't even need to wink.
Meanwhile, there was Elliot the troll, who is not worth talking about.
Observing Dan, I recalled a long ago discussion about what his shtick would be. Perhaps his sorrow has built over the years because the podcast format has deprived him of one of his greatest comedic tools, props.
His knees.
Oh, you could be a prop comic,
yeah,
Dan.
Yeah, there you go.
And what better prop in his current condition than a cane? I'll refer you back to the classic news
Michael
radio
Caine,
episode.
Hoagie from Jaws of Revenge.
I'll refer you back to the classic news radio episode, The Cane, where Phil Hartman learned the unlimited benefits of a cane, including pointing, twirling, and brandishing it like a sword. When out for a stroll, use Bill McNeil's classic line, "Beautiful day out there, perfect cane weather." Please consider the possibilities. With that said, thank you for the wonderful evening. Of all the shows I've been seen recently in New York, none have left me so bruised by laughter as The Bad Movie Night, quite literally, after 3 hours of commentary, PowerPoint presentations, a Michael Caine cameo, and a live reading of Elliot's Jaws/Taking of Pelham screenplay.
Oh, that was fun.
My jaw felt sore. Those were either big laughs or I'm a morose bastard whose inability to smile and feel joy rivals only one man alive. I think he's talking about me.
Oh.
The shame is my friend and fellow flopper, Christopher, could not attend, despite the advanced notice he had, using studying the bar as his excuse. Meanwhile, I was sitting two rows from David Kalin. I think it's clear.
A sports star extraordinaire.
I think it's clear which was the better evening, once you consider how much unwanted sports trivia I was sitting so close to.
Yeah, you left with a lethal case of sports that was
yours,
contagious.
Charlie, last name withheld.
Thanks,
well, thanks
Charlie.
For the kind words.
Yeah,
the
glad
words
you enjoyed
David
the show.
Kalin, that was a real slam dunk.
In the word, as David Kalin would say, touchdown.
Goal.
As David Kalin would say, I'm envious of my brother.
As David Kalin would say, read my letter on your podcast.
Nothing brings, I encountered something, few things can bring me greater joy than the fact that there's this sports writer who follows me on Twitter and my brother follows him. And I don't follow him, I don't care about sports. And I think he listens to the podcast, and thank you very much for listening. But it's just like, I love that my brother follows this guy who will mention me occasionally on Twitter. Can't escape me, Dave.
We're running late, so one last letter. This one's titled Prophesying M. Night Shyamalan's Plagiarisms.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Original Peaches.
That's us.
In the podcast for Knowing, incidentally, a movie about predicting disasters.
Yep.
You guys,
too bad they couldn't predict Knowing.
You guys collaboratively predicted, with uncanny precision, the plot of M. Night Shyamalan's After Earth. And you even predicted he would steal it back from Alex Proyas, who stole it from him. Excerpted from your conversation. Now, he has a little playlist here where we have has our...
Should we play ourselves?
I feel like we should play each other. So
okay.
Elliot, you play Stuart.
Okay.
I'll play Elliot, and Stuart, you play Dan.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm Stuart. Okay.
Yeah.
You could call it Earth 2 or Orth, dude. I thought the Meowvie was really good. A real twice on there and that ending. I bet M. Night Shyamalan was watching that really meowed.
You stole my twist. It's true. It's me, M. Night Shyamalan.
No, guys, if M. Night Shyamalan made the movie, it would be totally clear at the end that the movie that the planet we see is actually Earth.
And there'd be a big sign that said, "Welcome to Earth."
Earth original, dudes.
population two.
And now I'm just going to ad lib as Stuart for a little bit. Cowabunga, party, Coors Light, dude, meow. Yeah.
What's the use? Why bother?
Boobs, please.
That's true. I'm basically Eeyore.
I'll order two.
So anyway, the email ends, please discuss your impending lawsuit, if possible, in a podcast about After Earth. I mean, that podcast, I'm sure, is forthcoming. But
I want to. I want to do After Earth really badly.
That email is from Doug, last name withheld. Thanks, Jones, Doug. I assume.
Doug Jones.
Thanks for writing in, Doug, and reminding us that M. Night Shyamalan owes us some money. Some scratch.
Yeah. Yep. Some sweet cheddar.
Who says that?
Is that like cheddar cheese with sugar on it?
That's cheddar that you have on top of a slice of apple pie.
Oh, man. So American, that Dan McCoy. So what's the next part of this fucking shit?
Wow. Way to dismiss the podcast that has been your bread and butter, my friend.
Yeah, you're living off this thing.
I live off bread and butter. That's how I get this body.
Because we don't make a lot of money from the podcast. All you can afford is bread and some butter.
The next segment, and the final segment, is recommendations. Movies that we enjoyed that we recommend that you watch instead of Food Fight.
I don't know. Should we just all recommend Food Fight?
We'll run out of time. Whatever.
The psychedelic mind freak that was Food Fight.
Look, it was Food Fight's happening and it freaks us out.
You like a little body horror? Watch Food Fight.
Yeah.
If you want to know what it's like if they hired David Cronenberg to make a kids movie and then David Cronenberg said, no, this is too scary for me to work on.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump in. If you are looking to watch an animated movie and you watch Food Fight and it terrifies you and you feel unclean and you want to feel better about yourself, I would go pop in a laser disc of The Last Unicorn.
I mean, that is on DVD.
Yeah. No, you should watch it on laser, though. That's
Jeff Bridges color. And Mia Farrow, yep. Starring in...
With a soundtrack by America. If you haven't seen The Last Unicorn, who the fuck are you? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
If you have
clearly
seen it,
didn't have HBO in the early 80s. I'll tell you that.
It's great. It's the story about, I guess, The Last Unicorn. That's
Wait, have you seen this movie?
I've seen it a shitload of times. Just,
you don't seem to know anything about it.
The Last Unicorn is one of those movies I've seen so many times.
Based on the Peter S. Beagle book of the same name.
And that's a book that... I don't know how you guys feel, but it's a book that I've never read, and I hear it's great.
I read it.
But I hear it's great, but I'm nervous about reading it because I love the movie so much that I'm worried that it will, like, I hear it's so good that it will negatively affect my opinion.
I don't know about that. Like, I read it. I really liked it. It is maybe the most 1970s book that has ever existed.
Okay.
So that may
The Last Unicorn Wife Swaps
prevent you from
more than Shadow of the Torturer by Gene Wolfe, where two guys get in a duel with poisonous flowers.
It's a very enjoyable book, but it also has like a weird fuzziness of the era.
Okay,
that sounds pretty cool.
So Last Unicorn, do you recommend the sequel, Last Unicorn 2? Hey, we found another unicorn.
Hey, we're wrong, guys.
I didn't even know they made that. Who's in that one?
It's also Mia Farrow.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's just say Wayne Knight.
Rachel Dratch.
Wayne Knight. It's Wayne Knight and Rachel Dratch. They made it last year.
Yeah. It's
so the last Wayne unicorn
is Emma Roberts. As the second to last unicorn.
Oh, wow. Second to last
unicorn. No, the first last unicorn was the second to last unicorn.
Okay. The penultimate unicorn.
That was the penultimate unicorn. This is the ultimate
unicorn. That's what
they
were going to call it, but they realized that nobody understood what that meant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they wanted the super clear title, like The Last Unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'll take
so
it.
So that was my last recommendation, guys.
Forever?
Question mark.
Dan.
I'll recommend a movie that I had the pleasure of seeing on the big screen.
On a plane, of course.
Well, as big a screen as I can get on a plane. Right. Anyway, it's called The Internship.
No, I saw it at the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
Was it Don John? I saw that. That was pretty
good. I saw Godzilla. Brooklyn Academy
Starring
of Music.
Matthew Broderick.
No, the original Japanese film. Bam.
So you mean Gojira.
Yeah, this is the third annual... Puppetry on Film series that BAM has been doing, co-sponsored by the Jim Henson Foundation, and this was their...
Which is for puppets who didn't save enough money to retire on.
Yeah. This is Yes. This is the Men in Suits night. I watched Godzilla and Aliens, which I don't need to recommend because I've...
I'm sure everyone is listening to this.
Everyone's seen it. And
if you haven't, you stop listening right now and go see Aliens.
Between the ages of 13 and 20, I probably saw it about 30 times myself. But it played like gangbusters on a big screen. But Godzilla, this is the first time I've seen the original movie. And what I knew that it was a somber movie. I knew that it was a movie that dealt with sort of Japan's relationship to the nuclear bomb and nuclear power in general. But yeah, it surprised me how much it was placed in kind of the tradition of serious Japanese post-war cinema in general. Like mm-hmm. the tone of it is very serious, and then there's a giant lizard in it.
But you, from that movie, you would never guess that, like, toys of Godzilla would become a common thing, yeah. or that there'd be, like, it's a Hanna-Barbera cartoon. It is a very sad, traumatic movie in a lot of ways.
If you like that, you should also watch another movie that features men wearing giant suits. It's a movie called Pacific Rim. Maybe you've heard of it.
Uh-huh. Very somber movie.
Very serious. Dealing
I'll never forget the sadness of the moment where his giant sword cuts through the wing of a giant monster.
And it's crazy that they made those monsters look so realistic with a guy inside of them. Right?
Yeah. No, not at all.
Okay.
But that is a good movie, the original Gojira. And try to see that and not the Americanized version with Raymond
Burr.
Yeah, I did
not see the one that has Raymond Burr in it or whatever.
For me as a kid, I must have watched the Raymond Burr Godzilla several dozen times. Like, I watched the Godzilla movies over and over again as a kid.
Yeah, judging by your letters to G-Fan alone, you've seen it dozens of times.
There's a reason I have a lifetime subscription to G-Fan. I've been there. Look, I remember the days before it was a glossy mag, and I remember the days when it stopped being a glossy mag. But but as an adult, seeing the original Japanese cut when they first kind of re-released it to American theaters about 10 years ago or so, I remember what a shock it was to me and what like a revelation to see this serious treatment of this subject, you know. So yeah. And how much it really made less sense to me that a movie like Godzilla vs. Megalon eventually came about, where it's just like a cartoon character fighting a giant bug monster, you know. Anywho, I'll recommend my movie now. I'm going to recommend a movie that may still be on Netflix Instant right now, so you could literally watch it at this moment at your fingertips. And it's a movie called Walker, starring Ed Harris.
You're thinking of Walker, Texas Ranger.
I am not.
This is a TV show. That's not a movie. Yeah, it doesn't count.
This is a 1987 film, Walker, directed by Alex Cox. And it's basically the movie that ended Alex Cox's big budget filmmaking career. Like,
now, you may know Alex Cox from
Repo Man, Sid and Nancy. He had, I think, just made Sid and Nancy. And they said, okay, we're going to give you a bigger budget, which was like $6 million or something, which at the time in 1987 was not an enormous budget, but a big enough budget. And he said, okay, I want to make this period film based on the true story of William Walker, who was kind of an American adventurer who traveled around Latin America overthrowing governments for the most part, and went to Nicaragua in the 1850s and made himself dictator of Nicaragua for about 2 years before being overthrown and became increasingly unhinged as the movie portrays him. And I'm going to do it explicitly as a statement about America's current actions in Latin America and Nicaragua. And what comes out of it is this movie that is kind of like if Terry Gilliam made a history movie that had a political point to it, where it's very over the top and like there are funny moments, but it's also very like stylized, messagey and dramatic in a way that I liked a lot, and there's some action scenes that I liked a lot in it. But he uses purposeful anachronism increasingly as the movie gets on. For instance, there's a scene I was not prepared for because I knew very little about this movie when I first started watching it, where two characters are discussing that Walker has taken over Nicaragua and what they're going to do, and they're in a carriage. It's the 1850s, but they're reading copies of Time and Newsweek that have photographs of Ed Harris as Walker on the cover, and it's not – there's no close-up of the magazines. It's not called attention to. Like, you have to notice it. And then the anachronisms become increasingly obvious, but not – they're not breaking the skin of the movie because they're so clearly purposeful, to the point where kind of history and the present eventually collide to a point. In a lot of ways, it's a movie that's kind of like a political cartoon in film form, but I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was really entertaining and interesting and not just something I was not expecting at all. So – Walker with Ed Harris.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Walker, Texas Ranger.
Sounds good.
Oh, and so, Joe Strummer does the score, too. So, for all you Clash fans.
Yeah. You know,
nobody likes that band.
Nobody, yeah. What,
the only band that matters? So,
you mean the only band that family matters? The Urkel band.
Urkel band.
the Steve Urkel band. Yeah.
Stefan Urkel.
When Stefan Urkel and
saxophone, I guess?
And Joe Strummer had that band together.
So, thanks for listening. And I think it brings another podcast to a close.
Man, I'm proud of us that Food Fight didn't break us.
Sure. We kept it pretty tight.
No, we didn't.
I mean, I don't know for sure that it doesn't break. I feel like
we should be talking about this after the show.
If a week goes by where we, like, one of us doesn't go mad and start killing people, then we'll know that we conquered Food Fight.
Yeah, that's true. So
start bleeding from the eyeballs.
If in 7 days we're not all dead, then we conquered Food Fight. Yeah,
yeah. Scan the AP wires, guys. Make sure that we got through it okay. So, but until then, I've been Dan McCoy. That's your cue.
Okay. I'm still Stuart Wellington.
And
thanks.
I will always be Elliot Kalin, no matter how hard I try.
Good night, everyone.
See ya. Would wanna be ya. Oh, can you feel the flop baby growing there?
It's pregnant. Kicking. The baby's kicking inside Dan's belly.
Oh, God. Look, I've just had a few beers. I'm not pregnant.
Yet. We'll see how this episode goes.
High five.
High five.
Take off our flop condoms.
Condoms are already
flop house. House condoms.
Russ Broing.
Snigger.
What? What is that?
That's the sound of your penis coming condom out of your pants.
Oh, that's Wolverine's penis?
Yeah.